Welcome to the Binge Essentials podcast. I'm your host, David Rocha, and joining me as always, fresh from the Matrix, is Romeo Mora. Romeo, red pill or blue pill?
God, I want the blue pill.
Like, you're a blue pill.
I'm sorry.
You're a blue pill.
I'm not a revolutionary. Like, I'll live in the pod.
Today, we're talking about the Matrix film franchise, and the Matrix is an American media franchise created by the Wachowskis, consisting of four feature films, animation, comics, and video games. The series features a cyberpunk story of the technological fall of humanity in which artificial intelligence machines imprison mankind in virtual reality system, the Matrix, to be farmed as a power source. Occasionally, some of the prisoners manage to break free from the system and become pursued by the artificial intelligence, both inside and outside of it. The film focuses on the plight of Neo, Trinity, and Morpheus trying to free humanity from the system while pursued by its guardians, such as Agent Smith. The series stars Keanu Reeves, Carrie Ann Moss, Lawrence Fishburne, Hugo Weaving, Jada Pinkett Smith, and many, many other actors like Harold Perrineau, Harry Lennox, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, Jonathan Groff. And joining us to talk about The Matrix, it's Wesley Riddle. Wes, welcome back to the show.
There is no spoon. Welcome to be back.
There is no spoon. Well, thanks for coming into the show to talk about The Matrix. This is something that me and Romeo have kicked around for a while. When he said you were interested in doing The Matrix, I was genuinely surprised. I guess I shouldn't be that surprised because it's not your first foyer into the sci-fi genre with us, as you've done with Star Trek, The Next Generation, and Back to the Future. Why did you want to jump on with The Matrix with us?
You know, I guess I have somewhat of a complicated history with The Matrix, but I think like anyone who saw the film in 1999, it just kind of blew me away. And I absolutely loved everything about it. I loved the universe. You know, I followed that up with Animatrix. I was super into that. I was very much looking forward to Enter the Matrix and Reloaded. I kind of fell off maybe the hype train a little bit, but I became really interested again when The Matrix 4 was shooting around the Bay Area, which I think they started shooting in 2019. And a lot of my friends on social media were posting about like, oh, Keanu Reeves is on this street, or they're like shooting a helicopter scene on this street. I really wanted to like get out and try and see some of those shoots. I never did, but it kind of rejuvenated my interest, and I've since gone back and revisited all of the things.
So you saw the first movie in theaters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah, I did not. I did see it maybe a year after it came out. Romeo, did you see it in theaters?
I'm trying to remember. Probably not, because it was a hard rated R film. So probably not.
Yeah.
I remember my dad having to like not strong arm them, but like give like explicit permission for me to go into the theater with them. Kudos to him.
Back in the day, you had to have been accompanied mm-hmm. by a parent to get in. They did check.
What's interesting about the movie is that it's barely rated R. You know what I mean? Like it's like a soft rated R.
I think it premiered maybe right after Columbine. There was a big self-awareness of like violence in media, because back then they were blaming everything from the quote unquote devil music and other films with violence with guns. There was this thing was like, should we be consuming this media? This glorifies violence, especially with guns.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I mean, there is a lot of gun violence in the movies, and we're Americans, so we're a little desensitized to seeing so much gun violence in films. And even though it's not like blood everywhere, I mean, there's still a whole lot of bullets coming out and people getting shot and everything. Yeah, it's true. It's very violent in that way. So yeah, you were very invested in this. After seeing the first film, I remember just seeing like pieces of it. So there was a long time during my life where I was thinking, have I seen the whole movie front to back? And so a few years ago, I did take the minute to watch the entire film front to back to make sure I have seen the whole film in its entirety. And yeah, like you said, Wes, it really does blow me away. I really think The Matrix is one of the best films of all time. It's certainly one of the best modern films of all time. And it's so tightly written. It does the hero's journey so well. It's really good. I mean, it's teaching you a lot of life lessons too, and it's throwing in some philosophical things that if you want to fall down that rabbit hole, so to speak, and explore all the things it's exploring, talking about, you can get into that. But if you just want to watch a cool action movie, it works on that level too. And those to me are like some of the best films, or the ones that could work on the the most basic of levels, but can also branch off into all these different directions if you want to dig deeper and enjoy something like that.
I totally agree. And I remember reading some of the hype online at the time, and people were just, I think, flabbergasted by this movie. I think it holds up extraordinarily well. Very tight, very well written. The scenes, I mean, even though it's been served as so much inspiration now that a lot of the things that the movie does are now tropes, I think it still feels like a very fresh experience to watch The Matrix. I absolutely love it.
Even though it's taking a lot of inspiration from like Japanese animation, taking some elements of cyberpunk, and also just a lot of kung fu, almost imitating some of the kung fu fights in older films, and doing a lot of stuff from John Woo films as well. You're exactly right. Even though he has all of those inspirations, it still feels so fresh in that way.
It was revolutionary because it did, sort of the first time that I could recall, at least for my generation, that you did have this mix of different genres coming together. And that's like, which is basically a love letter that the Wachowski siblings weaved into their narrative. And sort of like this whole philosophy of a sort of overarching philosophy lesson mixed in with martial arts and gunplay, which is no different to like the spaghetti westerns or in other films before it. We're just remixing what's already sort of been done before, but also creating new things like quote unquote bullet time and the role that it's played in cinema. But it was interesting, and it was really influential too, because I think a lot of directors and writers that were my age that are now creating their own things, and you sort of see similar narratives and action sequence are based on what they saw as growing up from The Matrix. In a sense, it was kind of like a watershed moment for a lot of writers and filmmakers. Also, the CGI, it sort of set also a new standard that what could be possible.
Yeah, absolutely. So first one comes out, everyone loves it. It makes a lot of money. Even at the end of the film, sure, it kind of leaves the door open for a sequel. But to me, I'm thinking, hey, I'm good with that, man. Like, that was fun. That was cool. If they make a second film, sure, I'm on board to see what's going on with that. So The Matrix Reloaded comes out, and I didn't go to theaters to see it, but I know I watched a bootleg copy of it.
Of course.
And I was at my friend's house and we were watching it. And of course, the quality is poor, but you know, I saw the film in its entirety in one sitting, so I can say that. But I mean, there was some cool action stuff in it. Back then, what is it? Was this 2003? No. Was it 2003 when the second one came out?
I think it was, because they shot the second and the third one together and released them both in the same year.
Right. 4 years apart, between the first film and the second film. And third film. Yeah, there was a lot of hype for it. Wes, did you go dressed up as Neo to go see the movie? Because some people sure did.
I saw the photos. You know, everyone was buying those like Neo sunglasses and stuff, bug-eyed sunglasses. No, I did not. I did see it in theaters.
You already said it. I'm already repeating it. I have a complicated relationship with these sequels. I have a tough time wanting to leave The Matrix to explore Zion and caring about these people. I don't know. It's just complicated. It really is. A lot of people say the plot gets convoluted, and I can see that, but I don't think it's hard to follow, but it does get convoluted.
Mm-hmm. It does.
I'm kind of at a loss too about what I'm supposed to think about Morpheus, because he goes into the real world and you just kind of find out he's a captain, but he's also kind of he's a pain in the ass, basically. He doesn't follow orders very well, but everybody loves him, but you have to like really believe in him. But at the same time, it's also kind of like, should we put so much faith and stock into what he's saying just because he's getting all his information from the Oracle? Should we put so much faith into the Oracle, or is the Oracle just pulling the strings the whole time? So it does bring up a lot of questions. But Wes, how do you feel about The Matrix Reloaded?
I really wanted to love it. It really lost me back in the day, so much so that I never saw The Matrix Revolutions until 2021. It really killed my hype. You know, I've since gone back and rewatched it, and I still really do not like Reloaded. I think most of my problem, you know, it's a movie that really tries to deepen the world of The Matrix. I think the way that it does that is kind of clunky. There's a lot of exposition, there's a lot of lore, but the movie, unlike the first one, it's not a exciting thrill ride. To me, it always felt like a lot of exposition that was kind of confusing. The motivations of the characters became blurry. In between, there were action sequences that I thought were very tedious. For example, the Agent Smith fight with his 100 CGI clones, it looked terrible back in the day. It looks terrible today. Whereas in the first movie, they did all these special effects shots, and I think they really sold them, the technology they had at the time. The CGI becomes really blatant and obvious and awkward, I think.
The Neo spin kicky thing where I'm just like, ooh, that does not look good. This looks like PS1 graphics here that I'm pretty sure I saw the Tomb Raider game.
And that fight went nowhere. Like, that fight happens, but it's seriously in there to feel like we got way too much dialogue going on. Let's throw a fight right here in the middle. That's like 6-7 minutes long.
To me, the fights just seem really boring in that movie. You know, when I think of that movie, I think of like somebody just kung fuing somebody on the shoulder with dust popping out for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. So, like, I have a hard time sort of thinking, like, so what if Smith becomes a virus and takes down the Matrix? You think the human servers will see it as a benefit because basically the machine's out at war with itself? So I had a hard time caring, like, so what if it's left unchecked? It would have been more interesting that Neo and Smith would have made a bargain. Be like, hey, you want the Matrix? Cool. You can have the Matrix. Let me just free the people and work together type of thing. But it's like this convoluted thing where Neo had to save the Matrix too.
Well, I think because it also, you have to consider that not everybody is ready to be red-pilled. I think they even then say that they'll only take someone out of the Matrix if they're under a certain age. Because I think if you're like in your 40s or 50s, that's your life, that's your world, you know, and everything. And then you get taken out of that. We're kind of implying that there's really no benefit to that. Like, it's almost too much of a shock to the system to even survive doing something like that to someone at a more advanced age.
It's just basically saying that then the system is broken because they'll always be enslaved humans.
Which is why we got peace at the end of the third film, because that was the best resolution.
Or so we thought. Because lies. Yeah, I understand that point. And it's like this weird dichotomy too, where Neo is set up to be the savior. And he's trying to save everyone. But there isn't like the hard discussions. Well, maybe you can't save everyone. Like, to really stop the machines, you got to break the system or the cycle, which he sort of does, but in a selfish way. When Trinity's life is like in jeopardy at the end of the second film, where you're kind of like, I see what you're doing. You're being Daenerys Targaryen at this point. You're saying we got to break the wheel, but in the most selfish way possible.
Love is a theme that's used very often in these films. To me, it's not a good representation of solving all their issues.
No, it's not. And I kind of feel like something that I think picking up where was sort of going with Morpheus, it kind of ruins the character for me, because you realize, oh, he's not this person who's looking out for the good of humanity. It's an ego trip. It's basically saying, I'm right. He's a zealot, which is in a way kind of a mirror image of like what Agent Smith is doing, saying that I'm going to prove everyone right by turning them into copies into me and making them believe what I believe. I understand like what the Wachowskis were doing, in a sense of we got to sort of expanding the world and see what Neo and the crew of the, I can never pronounce names, ship's name.
Nebuchadnezzar.
Thank you. See like what they're fighting for. But at the same time, I think like they could have done a better job, because I kind of feel like the world of Zion is just surface level. They're just large set pieces for the battle scene in the third film. I think that's the problem with the second film. It's all set up. Because I did see that in theaters, and I'm thinking, okay, this is good. Now I have to wait 6 months. Oh, by the way, if you want more stories or a complete story of what happened in this film, go play Enter the Matrix, where you control Niobe.
Did you play through that, Romeo?
Yes, I did. Beginning to end.
That game was fun as hell.
I believe Jada Pinkett Smith went back to voice her character, because there was such an emphasis on Niobe. But if you didn't play the game, you wouldn't know how cool the character she is. Why it made sense that in the fourth film, she's the leader of Io. All that great character development happened on a game that maybe few people got to play.
Yeah, I was interested in that one, and it reviewed terribly, and people said it was glitchy as heck, and I was like, eh, I'll pass on that.
I mean, to be fair, there were things that happened, especially that airport scene level that I wasn't too thrilled with. Died a lot. That's okay. Some of the stuff that happened in Zion, I rather they cut and made room for Niobe, because she's a cool character, and I'm kind of annoyed there weren't any scenes between her and Trinity, because I think those two would be badasses together.
Yeah, I remember feeling very confused about Niobe and feeling like she wasn't very fleshed out, feeling confused about her motivations, feeling confused about why the film wanted me to care about this character.
He had to play the game.
Fantastic filmmaking.
Yeah. And that's really the crux of the sequels, is that if you're not Neo, there's not really any character growth going on throughout the sequels. Even Neo, I barely know anything about Neo. I just know he's supposed to be the one. Everyone keeps telling me he's the one. What does Neo like to do? What is Neo? He was a computer programmer. That's all I got.
And here's the thing that I had issues with too, is, which we see it better in other post-apocalyptic stories, is the struggle of how quote unquote life was before and after. Everyone is just accepting of their situation and they're fine, and it doesn't seem to be any trauma. Granted, Neo has some trauma at the beginning of his like transition period, realizing his life was a lie, but everyone seems to have been fine. Maybe there's a program that they uploaded into their brains where you had a therapist sort of unpack your trauma.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
Right.
At the same time, it's like, kind of wanted to know who Trinity was in the Matrix and the struggle. And that could have been a good bonding experience between Trinity and Neo, or maybe even Morpheus and Neo, because he is sort of like his guide. I kind of felt like there's more stories, there's more of the background of who they were.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, and that's what makes Cypher, you almost kind of understand where Cypher's coming from in a way, even though he shouldn't be cutting deals with robots. I mean, come on, be smarter than that. But you get it. I mean, he spent 9 years out of the Matrix. He got burnt out. He was like, this is terrible, man. Like, I'm eating the steak, and I know the Matrix is telling me this steak is juicy and delicious. And he's totally fine with that, you know? And you know, I get it. If you're eating glop every single day, you're in a war that you don't think you can win. And yeah, you lose a little faith in someone who you put a lot of faith in. Like, I can see how after 9 years, you look at Morpheus and you think, how can I keep following this guy? How can I keep believing in this guy? And then you go to Zion, you're like, this place kind of sucks. And also, Trinity didn't love him back. There was all of these factors that ultimately made him decide that, you know what, I don't want to be any part of this anymore. That part I totally get. I'd be the kind of person who'd be like, so this is what it's like. All right, can I just go back? And then if you guys win the war, you wake me up. Like, just basically, like, just wake me up when we win the war.
and I don't understand, like, after they win the war, what next? Because they ruined the planet.
The planet is totally ruined. So
what's the point of
just living in the sewers, bro?
Right.
You're doing what they do in Matrix Resurrections with in Io. You're figuring out a way to grow strawberries underground like that. You're just trying to rebuild society, but it's going to be a struggle.
I almost wish there was some type of change made to the real world where there was a little bit of hope for saving the planet or comeback or having a little corner of the planet that's not destroyed. It always feels so bleak. In the first movie, you're just on the Nebuchadnezzar and you're just kind of imagining what Zion's like. But in the following movies, Zion seems like a terrible authoritarian place.
Which you would think they would make Zion more appealing to, like, okay, this is what we're fighting for. And the leadership makes me think, like, even if they win, it'll never get better.
Maybe they'll have more of those dance parties.
Yeah, right. More raves.
more sex orgy raves. Got it. That's what they're fighting for.
Yeah.
I remember being a teenager watching that scene. Not saying I was very sheltered growing up, but there was things I hadn't seen. That was the first time I ever seen anything like that, really. I was like so confused. I was like, what's going on here? Why are they just like suddenly breaking into a rave like this? But as an adult seeing that scene, thinking like, oh yeah, they're having a good time, but also thinking like, oh, okay, so this is what the Wachowskis like to do on their personal time, is go to sex orgy raves.
And it is
doing
true.
Some research, and I'm somewhat validated in thinking this way.
This is true.
Yeah, the Wachowskis seem like very interesting people in the sense like they're obviously, I think, very Hollywood, but they know a lot of cool people or seem like very cool people, are very open to meeting new people and of all different sorts of backgrounds. And you can see it in the way how they like the people they cast.
Their Netflix series, Sense8, you get a sense of that.
Yeah, they just know these cool people and are like, hey, you want to join us on this adventure called The Matrix? And they're just like, yeah, let's do it. I mean, that's basically what got Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss back for The Matrix Resurrections. It was basically a phone call. Lana's like, hey, I'm making The Matrix. You want to come back? And they're like, hell yeah, man.
What would have happened if they would have said no?
I know, right?
Once we get to the fourth film, a lot of the conversations that were happening in the film probably happened in the background about the of redoing The Matrix and the fact that they actually brought Warner Brothers into this universe. I think there was a lot of unloading on Lana's part about the situation, because I still think she might have been forced.
Oh, no, she was forced. Maybe not forced, but like definitely in a position where it's like, well, if I don't do it, someone else will.
Exactly.
And I don't want like, someone else to do it.
Like I said, the whole conversation in the fourth film, I think might be verbatim.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. With Matrix Reloaded, it's always kind of weird because I've been conditionalized to see like if I don't see the main character like disintegrate or like buried and then like a tombstone, then I'm always going to assume there's an ability for them to come back. So watching The Matrix Reloaded, thinking like the last shot we see of Neo, I mean, we presume he's dead. His body is being carried off by the machines. And all I could think about is, what are they going to do with his body? They're not going to bury it. That doesn't make any sense. And then, so it made total sense that they would fix it. And if I'm not mistaken, I think in the Matrix Online, Morpheus was trying to get Neo's body back.
Something like that,
which got Morpheus killed.
Yeah, which is a convoluted thing because you're dealing with MMOs. You got to cater to the hardcore fans that have been following the story, but also offer something new. And I was doing research to see like how involved the Wachowskis were. And they just gave their blessings to like, this is your world now. Have fun in this game simulation. And they made some choices because again, you're going into a thing where you're letting every player into the Matrix, but yet you still have to follow the MMORPG conventions where you need a healer, you need a fighter, you need some type of crafter to make sure, and you got to do raids. There's also a section fighting for the machines that don't want the Matrix to end. Again, convoluted. It survived until 2009 because at the time it had fewer than 500 active players. Not good for a MMO.
So Matrix Revolutions ends and I think to myself, okay, we're done with these films. We're not going back to the Matrix for some time. Ignorant me, right? You start to hear rumblings, reports that Warner Brothers is ready to go back into the Matrix. Michael B. Jordan was even attached to maybe star in this reboot. Yeah, so there was so many different rumors going on about this. And then you hear Lana Wachowski's coming back. You hear Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss are coming back. And then you get some theater actors in Neil Patrick Harris and Jonathan Groff joining the cast. Yahya Abdul-Mateen the second joining the cast. And I didn't know who he was going to play and then realized he was playing Morpheus, which is interesting. So yeah, you hear all of these things. And Wes, I know you said that Reloaded left such a bad taste in your mouth that you can bring yourself to watch Revolutions, but you hear about Resurrections. What were your thoughts of getting back into the Matrix when Resurrections is coming?
I was honestly really intrigued. You know, I think I'm mostly a glass half full optimistic person. I was like, okay, yeah, enough time has passed. Maybe we can kind of get past the mindset of the initial two Matrix sequels and try something maybe a little bit more reflective, a little bit more fresh, something a little bit less beholden to the kind of confusing lore they had set up. I was looking forward to Resurrections.
Romeo, were you looking forward to Resurrections?
I was curious to see what was happening. Plus, it was during the pandemic where I'm like, it's going to be free on HBO Max. I have nothing to lose, much to the frustration of everyone involved, because that was a big deal, especially for Lana Wachowski, who was not pleased because rightfully so, they labored over this film and it should be seen in a theater. But yeah, I was intrigued how they brought him back. I wasn't disappointed with the revelation of what the analysts did, but I kind of felt this was probably a way to sort of resolve some of the issues Lana probably saw. We're going to throw away Zion and actually create something what the human humans are fighting for, which I appreciate. If we got Io in the trilogy originally, we understand the motivations. Making Niobe the leader and sort of clearly saying what they're risking by going to war makes sense. I kind of feel like this film was kind of like a second chance to sort of set up the struggle of the human resistance fighters. However, when we get into the Matrix, that's the part where I'm kind of like, did we need to go there? Because it got meta quick. I like meta stuff all the time. Like, I love Supernatural, so I love meta. But it's getting to the point where I'm like, I feel like I'm a therapist that I'm paying to hear someone bitch to me about their creative struggles. That's why I felt about the Matrix sequences.
I was enjoying the first part of the film, and then the more and more we unravel what's going on and how we're incorporating other characters from the past films in, I just started losing interest and disappointed. And there was just other things too that I was really disappointed about. Like, we're talking about a franchise that really showed off the really great wiring kung fu action that we loved so much in those original films. And in this film, there was a lot of just your quick cut action films, almost like you had Liam Neeson there and not John Wick himself, Keanu Reeves. You know, I was really disappointed by the fight choreography. I was disappointed that we didn't get more Bugs. I thought she was a really cool character, and she'd like disappeared for like a half hour.
She's a plot device.
Yeah. And then at towards the end of the film, Neo's just basically doing the hand thing, and he's doing it over and over again, and it stops being special after a while. And then they're running away, and then all the people in the Matrix are turning into basically zombies. And visually, it's kind of cool seeing them all jump out of the windows and falling and stuff. Like, because all of the visuals are great. You know, they're bots and everything. Mm-hmm. But it's also just kind of like, this is just getting kind of stupid. Like, it's just turning into a World War Z type of movie towards the end here. I don't know. It really fell off hard for me. It was we were going up, we were having fun, and then it's like you're on a roller coaster. We're going up, we're having fun, and all of a sudden we're just nosediving. I felt like the dive was never stopping. You know, it was no end to the roller coaster dive.
My also main issue is you neutered the character of Trinity, because the whole film, except for like the very end of the third act, we didn't get Trinity, and that was annoying to me.
It annoyed a lot of people.
Well, and then again, and it sort of goes to the fact that looking back, Trinity as a character doesn't really have any agency in the film. She's just a plot device for Neo to work towards or work through, which is a shame because she is one of the kick-ass women in cinema. And yet I kind of felt like we would get more Trinity. Instead, we got Tiffany, which is a great payoff on the joke at the end of the film, but still, it was a little frustrating. And you're right, and you think that maybe Bugs would have taken over, but yet we got very little of her doing cool things.
Was it Jada Pinkett Smith playing Niobe again?
Yes.
It sure was.
They put her in so much makeup.
It's kind of uncanny valley a little bit with her character.
Which is a shame because Jessica Henwick is an amazing actress. The fact that they didn't utilize her as well as they could have, it makes me sad. And also disappointed on the lack of Priyanka Chopra Jonas, because they built her up. They sent her on that circuit. She's in three scenes.
Barely in the movie.
She's in three scenes. I will say, like, the performance I did enjoy was Jonathan Groff Smith.
You enjoyed that? Really?
Honestly, I liked that too.
Did you like it too? Okay.
It was a good amalgamation of he is sort of Smith, but he's his own character.
Right.
Where I think he sort of walked the fine line about. Same with Yaya, which after a while, I will say it got a little, I wish he kind of just toned it down a bit, which I think both actors sort of met the challenge because there's big expectations. If you're going to be called Smith or you're going to be called Morpheus, you're obviously going to be compared to the originals. But though I liked it in a way that they're not the same character, they're kind of like version 2.0, like a different iteration of it, which I kind of enjoyed, which, like computer programs, do happen. And then I don't know how I feel about Neil Patrick Harris. What do we think of Neil Patrick Harris as the analyst?
I was really into his character in the first half of the film. I think the first half of the film was very, like, it delved into the mind fuckiness a lot. I mean, I know it was very overtly meta, but it almost made me feel a little losing touch with reality to hear the conversations between Neo and the analyst when he was acting as the therapist to Neo. It almost felt like they could have gone another direction with the movie and just the trope of waking up and it's all a nightmare, but you wake up and you have severe mental illness. I was pulled in by that thread toward the end of the movie. I kind of lost that and I was just like, oh, look, it's Neil Patrick Harris.
No, I was kind of hoping there was a twist that maybe he really wasn't the analyst, but a new version of the Oracle.
That would have been interesting.
That he was trying to make Neo better.
Oh.
To get over his own hangups of being the one that he took for granted and made him work for it. Because that's the other thing I was annoyed with. He never had to work. He was just crowned the one, and therefore he is.
He didn't always believe in himself that he was the one until the end of the first film. So when they're trying to escape the Matrix, Morpheus and Trinity get out, but then that homeless person turns into Agent Smith, and Neo stays and stands his ground and tries to fight him off, and he dies. Then he becomes reborn because he's Jesus Christ. And
again.
And then only then does he really like truly start to believe himself that he's the one. So in the first film, it's all about choice, and Neo had to make numerous choices throughout the film to get where he needed to be in order to believe himself that he is the one. So I push back a little bit that he had to work for it, because I think he did. Now, as far as the sequels go, nah, he didn't earn any of that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I mean. And I think that would have been a nice twist where the analyst would have been like, let's deconstruct you and figure out, are you deserving of this title? And it would have been interesting that if he were to make a selfish choice, maybe he is the one, because his whole mission was Trinity. I get it. Love of his life. She's imprisoned. We got to go save Trinity. But at the expense of Io. Niobe's right. And like, you're going to risk all of this for one human life. What is so important about Trinity? And that's the question that I felt like they didn't answer. Why is Trinity so important that we're risking everything for? Because Neo says so? Because he's the chosen one?
I'm not sure I can cite any like textual evidence for this, but I feel like there's an implication that Neo isn't really the one without Trinity there. Maybe there is a little bit in Resurrections when they're talking about how to build like the Super Neo Trinity battery, they had to like adjust their pods to be a certain amount of space from each other, almost like they're magnets with all of this kinetic energy between them.
Which is why they were like in the same city and they would be at the same coffee shop. It helps like charge the Matrix better. It makes it run more functionally.
Which raises the question of why these robots haven't invented nuclear fusion yet. But beside the point, I think there's almost evidence for Neo and Trinity being sort of a combined character. I wish they would have gone further in that direction, and I wish Trinity hadn't had such a truncated character arc, especially in this final movie. It would have been really interesting to see more of her perspective, especially with the light that this kind of bubble modal matrix is made specifically for Neo, and Trinity's just kind of there. We see her from Neo's perspective, but it doesn't quite make sense of why this is also her perfect world.
And I sort of like understand that, but I need better lore. I need something, because obviously they need Neo and Trinity together. That helps the machines. But why are the humans going in and risking everything? Because again, Neo's the one, which is something that I felt like there should be something more compelling for them to sacrifice everything that they built on Io. I think this would have worked better as a miniseries where we had time to flesh out the stories and the worlds.
So Wes, are there any characters that we haven't explored enough that you would like to talk about?
One comes to mind, and I hope I have the name right. Tank from the original movie, who I believe is the last person standing of the Nebuchadnezzar crew, along with Trinity and Neo. I wanted to talk about him for a couple of reasons. First, I think the crew in the original movie, they're all really interesting and maybe not the most complex characters, but I think in that movie, they achieve this level of you get to know these characters, they have personalities, they have motivations. They're likable, interesting people. It really hurts when there's the sellout and, you know, everyone gets betrayed. Most everyone gets killed. That was kind of a heart-wrenching element of the first movie, and I really liked the emotions of it. And I really liked Tank at the end of that first movie, and I thought it was a real shame that he did not come back for the two sequels. I think that would have helped segue those movies a little bit more and carry a little bit of that emotional through line that I think was missing. And I know they kind of replaced him with his brother, whose name I don't recall, but it just didn't really quite work for me. I wish they had kept him in it.
Do you know the backstory as to why he wasn't in the following films?
I looked this up at one point, and I think he turned out to be kind of a weird person in some way, and they didn't want to work with him anymore.
Here's what happened. So the actor's name is Marcus Chong. And Marcus Chong, who is the son of Tommy Chong from Cheech and Chong. Well, actually, he was adopted, I should say. He's African-American father, and he has a Chinese mother. He was eventually adopted by Tommy Chong and his wife in the late 70s. So he filed a lawsuit at the L.A. County Superior Court against Warner Brothers and AOL, Time Warner, saying that Warner was in breach of a 1998 verbal agreement and a 2000 contract to continue the character of Tank in the film sequels. He says he was offered $250,000 to appear in both The Matrix Reloaded and Matrix Revolutions. So he said that he was supposed to get that much per movie, you know, but they were saying like, no, that's total to appear in both movies. Basically, they had a falling out because of that. He even was arrested at one point because he was allegedly making threatening phone calls to the filmmakers. So, he claims he's been blackballed from Hollywood since, and he blamed the Matrix creators and Warner Brothers for branding him as a terrorist. This is what he said, a terrorist. And I was texting Romeo about this, and I'm like, he did get blackballed, but he kind of deserved it, though. going on and claiming that you were supposed to make twice as much money. None of this is on paper. There's no contract to this at all. And you keep, like, you're pushing and you're suing companies that claiming this. It's like, yeah, dude, you're looking like somebody who is hard to work with.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it's a shame. And I did like Tank. Did I think the acting was a little overdone sometimes? Yeah, but, you know, it's fun. You know, I was having fun with him. I thought he was a cool character. I was surprised he survived because he did take one hell of a shot with that gun. That gun kills Cypher, but it doesn't kill him, so that's peculiar. But I'm just rolling with it. It's the Matrix. I'm surprised you say you didn't like Harold Perrineau's performance, because I did like Link. I did like who he was and where he's coming from. Like, we see him go back to his wife. She's basically like, oh, you're back, but then you're just going to leave again. He's just like trying to help her understand that, look, I believe in Morpheus. I have like this higher calling that I have to do this. I have to help save humanity, you know, but it's obviously a very complicated relationship. Like, there was more character there that I see than I saw in like Neo or Trinity. Neo and Trinity, I'm just supposed to expect that they just love each other instantly, like love at first sight. I don't know. It's kind of strange. Romeo, I know you're mentioning Trinity. She was told by the Oracle that she was going to fall in love with the One, and the One is Neo. Therefore, she falls in love with him. But there weren't any other reasons why she should fall in love with Neo. Like, is it something about Neo's personality? What is it about Neo that gives her reason to fall in love with him? It's just very basic. It doesn't work.
And that's a struggle I have about it. They're supposed to have this epic love, but I don't see it. The work isn't there. The chemistry is there, but the work isn't there. It's all on faith.
Yeah, it feels very forced.
Which is amazing, because granted, this is the beginning of the Wachowskis' work. Because again, I cannot help but compare it to Sense8, which is also about love. Like, that's one of the main themes of that TV show, was about love and how it transcends space and time. Here we don't get that. Again, granted, like I'm mentioning, like, this is the beginning of the writing careers, and sort of explaining those universal themes. But yeah, we're just told. We're just taking it for granted, which in the first film, that's fine. It works for what it is. As a standalone film, I buy into it because they've been through a lot of shit. I get it. But you see the cracks of that in the two films after.
Maybe it's just a brilliant original example of two very avoidant emotional attachment styles coming together in the film.
I've been going around in my head thinking about this, like, would The Matrix be better off as just the standalone film?
I'm kind of torn on one aspect, because I do feel like it's a good thing that the sequels came out, in terms of it looks like they had a lot of fun making those movies. I heard an anecdote not too long ago. I was listening to a podcast. So it was about a completely different topic. And they happened to bring up The Matrix, and they're talking about, you know, their disappointment in the sequels. And one of the guests on the podcast revealed that he was an extra on The Matrix Reloaded. And they shot the highway chase sequence was all shot in Alameda, California. Yep. And having lived in the Bay Area for almost 8 years, yeah, I was very entertained by that. And I was like, that would have been really, really fun to see that process. So I guess there's one side of my mind that's like, I'm glad those movies got made. They might not have been perfect, but they tried and it looks like they had fun making them, you know, employed lots of people. There's a lot of creativity and expression that wouldn't have happened had they just kept it to one movie. So
I'm totally fine with the sequels existing. It's just too bad story-wise that it didn't fulfill me in the way that I like the first film did. But speaking of the highway sequence, are there any other like sequences or visuals that really stood out to you that you think about or that you love to talk about?
I feel like the first movie is just scene after scene that absolutely wonderful, but I will hold that for a second. I want to talk about the latest movie. I actually have a soft spot for the portrayal of San Francisco in this modern tech matrix bubble. You know, having worked in a tall building in San Francisco, and I wasn't working for a tech company, but I was tech adjacent. There was something about that that really intrigued me and caused me to be a little bit self-reflective of some of the career choices I've made. And I thought the shots of the city skyline were absolutely beautiful. You know, they got away from kind of the green tinted matrix and had a little bit more nuance to the colors. I love those panning shots of the city in the fourth movie.
Yeah, it was a love letter to San Francisco. I would agree with that compared to the other films.
It's almost hard to think of, you know, one or two sequences from the first movie. What immediately comes to mind is that rescue sequence where they enter. It starts, I think, with the, the guns, lots of guns scene. They walk into that lobby. There's that extensive shootout with the pillars of concrete bursting. I know now that's
fantastic.
Too much gun violence, but the kinetic energy of that, so enthralled every time I see it. It all leads up to that rooftop sequence with the helicopter, with Trinity shooting the agent in the head. Dodge this. I'm here for it. That is a roller coaster ride. And every time I watch that, I'm just like, yes, this is movie magic.
For me, it's the opening scene of the first film with Trinity. Like, it set the tone. If you want to give someone like an idea what The Matrix is, that opening scene is the perfect thesis statement of this whole franchise.
It's really good.
Yeah. And it's so iconic to recreate it shot for shot in the fourth film, because it is an impactful scene that many people still reference in some sort of way in terms of how they create badass female characters.
The pod scene, seeing Neo taking out all the wires and the jacks, that to me is still like one of the craziest visual things I've ever seen.
He's so emaciated.
Yeah.
I love that detail.
Anytime someone also gets jacked into the Matrix always makes me squirm, because they're, you know, they're sticking that big old jack into the back of their head. I don't mind getting blood drawn. Like, I can see a needle in me. Seeing the needle go inside me, I always like have to look away. I can't handle something being injected in me. So when I see them being injected like that, I'm always like, oh.
The sound always gets me, that like scraping metal against metal.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. Just thinking about it. Oh man. So just want to bring up some other characters real quick that I just kind of liked when they showed up. I liked Seraph, who was basically the program that was there to guard the Oracle. He looks cool. He's a good fighter because obviously he knows martial arts. He was a lot of fun. Something strange enjoyable about the key maker.
Yeah.
You're running around, you hear his keys jingling, and he had a key for everything, and he's like making keys in the middle of them running away. You know, that's great. I like the key maker.
That's what I kind of missed about the new film, all the programs. We got like all of the exiles, but I kind of wish during this odyssey they interacted with more programs. Granted, the reconstruction of the new Matrix, they got rid of those programs and replaced them with quote unquote bots. But still, I feel like that's what I was missing, because those were like cool, iconic little characters. Even the Oracle, like granted, Sati replaced the Oracle in that fashion, but it sort of drew the allure of what the Matrix is. It's not just this blank little ones and zero black and white. There was still some type of variation to the Matrix that is a larger ecosystem, which again, going who the Wachowskis are, because they fought against this whole binary system, which is funny that Neo was creating a new MMO in the fourth film called Binary, which is funny in itself that he couldn't complete it. I enjoyed those characters because it added variety and it sort of expanded the world and made it more interesting.
And I like the set of the architect, that I like the scene, but the TVs all around them and the two doors.
That was really fun.
It was cool. It was fun. Hell of a bold scene to have in a blockbuster film.
I kind of wish they kind of toned it down a bit because there was your plot twist. Everything that's happened before will happen again type of deal. But I kind of felt like that scene was kind of like, oh, this is a broken system. No matter what Neo chooses, he loses. And I felt like that was undercut by the high and dramatic of it. And the fact that he isn't the first chosen one. There have been many chosen ones that the Matrix picked out, which I thought was fascinating. And I kind of wish they did more with. They brought up that idea and they never revisited it.
So, Wes, earlier in the podcast, you talked about how you're really into the Animatrix. I actually watched this for the first time the other night, and I knew it was well received and everything. But when I watched it, I was like, this shit goes hard. Like, this is really cool. This is really interesting. I really liked it. What are your thoughts on the Animatrix? Do you have like a favorite segment? What does it do for you in relation to the films?
Well, my caveat on the Animatrix is that I was really into it following the hype of the OG Matrix film, but I have not rewatched it recently. So my memories are a bit fuzzy. I remember there being several, I think it was a two-parter, kind of on the history of the machine war, humans. There's also one that I really liked. I think it was about a girl and her cat. I think the cat was in and out of the Matrix.
It's about the glitches.
Yeah, the glitches. Those are the memories that really stick with me. I've never really been an anime person, but from time to time, I delve into something, and I just remember being really intrigued by the Animatrix. I remember I was pretty young, you know, I was like showing my dad like, oh, look at this. This is going to be like the next movie is going to go into this. So I had a good time nerding out to that. I remember really liking the different art styles, the different storytelling perspectives. I thought it was a really novel idea. Like I said, I was also really curious about Enter the Matrix, but I shied away from that one upon reception and release. For me, the Animatrix is the piece of additional content that really gelled with me at the time. I could see if they had gone a different direction with The Matrix 4, and instead of it being a live action blockbuster, if they had gone an anime route with voiced characters, I think that also would have been a really intriguing idea. And I probably would have been into that as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of the legacy of the Animatrix for me. Do you think it holds up, David? Do you think it's worth rewatching at this time?
I do. I think they could maybe cut down a couple of the stories. Like 9 stories is maybe a little bit too much for this. You know, it kind of drags after a while. Even though it's a 90-minute movie, it just feels long. You know, it's like you're sitting there watching 9 episodes in a row. And yeah,
the original kinda, binge watch.
Yeah, yeah. So it kind of wears you down. So if they kept it to more like 3 or 4 stories, it would be even better. But yeah, I think it's worth watching, definitely. And it does surprise me, knowing how the Wachowskis love Japanese animation, that we didn't get a full-on Matrix anime straight from Japan, because they signed off on all of these video games and they directed the Enter the Matrix video game. To see that they kept it just at the Animatrix, having these great collaborators with all these really interesting ideas and animation styles. I think you're right. I think this is where maybe the direction the Matrix franchise could really go and have a lot of success in.
Wasn't Ghost in the Shell a big influence on the Matrix?
Yeah, and then in the Animatrix, the final fight of the Osiris leads into the second film and Enter the Matrix. It was a prequel to Enter the Matrix. Yeah, there's a lot of weird things that they did with Enter the Matrix, because like the Neo fanboy introduced in the second film, his origin story got told in the Animatrix, which again, if you didn't see the Animatrix, you wouldn't understand. The one that I really liked was the Second Resistance. That's the one that stands out to me the most, because unfortunately, it's the only way we sort of get the history.
It's actually my favorite segment as well. So one thing that wasn't mentioned, a couple things, but one of the video games we haven't mentioned is The Matrix Awakens, which was released during the 2021 Game Awards on December 9th, 2021. It features Trinity and Neo along with photorealistic 3D scan models of both Carrie Ann Moss and Keanu Reeves from the present time, portrayed by themselves in a cinematic and QTE shooter scenes where the player can take control of Io, a character which Epic introduced with Unreal's MetaHuman creator tool. Now, I watched some of the walkthrough of this stuff, and it's freaky, man. Like, that photorealistic stuff is freaky.
Huh. Is it actually a full game, or is it kind of like a tech demo?
It's a demo. It's a tech demo. The demo. Yeah, Real Engine 5 is just released in 2020, which for next-gen consoles, but unfortunately, we won't see, like, video games with Unreal Engine 5 for at least a couple more years, because they're still supporting the older generations. Fortnite is using it currently right now. Good for them. Because I think I told David this. Yeah, there's blades of grass that's wasted on this game because no one's sitting around in a shooter taking in the scenery. I think it's got to the point where I would be down with a Real Engine 5 video game of The Matrix, because I think we've gotten to the point where, like, hey, let's do this.
Yeah, and another thing that was mentioned, The Matrix Comics, which collects stories set in The Matrix, the virtual reality world designed by the machines in order to control the human race into believing it is real world, except for the few who have freed themselves and now struggle to free others. The Wachowskis, I think, penned all of these Matrix comics. I didn't know these existed. Romeo, you're a comic guy. Did you know these existed?
I didn't. I haven't gone back yet to read those. I knew they existed, but at the time, like, they were hard to find.
Unless, sure. I mean, they were basically like reading material for their online website just to get you, like, hyped for movie. Yeah. What about you, Wes? Did you know about these comics?
No, I did not.
So just going to run through some suggestions here. Wes, you already mentioned Ghost in the Shell. We have that written down here. So clear that there was some influence from that film that played into The Matrix. We mentioned a lot of John Woo stuff earlier. Hard Boiled is probably the one that really has the biggest influence on The Matrix. Really cool film about a cop who loses his partner in a shootout with gun smugglers, and he goes on a mission to catch them.
I'll have to check that out. I think the only John Woo movie I've seen is Mission Impossible 2. Wow.
Yeah, his action films from the 90s with Chow Yun-Fat are really, really good. There's that one, and there's The Killer. Yeah, there's a bunch of them. And but yeah, Mission Impossible 2. Oh, man. Oh, man, that movie. You know, I'm glad they didn't go full John Woo, the Wachowskis, because we would have seen some doves in The Matrix, and we would have been like, what does this mean? Why is this here?
Slow motion motorcycle crash toward each other.
Yep. Another, you know, this is a kind of a random suggestion, but Memento, because Joey Pants, who plays Cypher, and Carrie Ann Moss, they're both in Memento. Mm-hmm. So if you like them, check out Memento. So The Matrix, we didn't talk about this much, but The Matrix was like a revival for Keanu Reeves' career. And it was a huge stepping stone for Carrie Ann Moss' career.
We didn't talk about, like, all of the could have been castings.
Yeah, yeah, which I'll do right now. So imagine Brad Pitt as Neo. I don't know.
Or Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. Oh, strange.
This one that trips me out, they offered it also to Sandra Bullock, considering rewriting it as Neo as a female character, which I thought that would have been awesome.
That would have been interesting. Her career was kind of plotting as well until Miss Congeniality came out. I think the one that may have happened if the pitch was better would have been Will Smith. If they just pitched the film better, he would have taken the role for sure. But instead, he turned it down and he went and did Wild Wild West, and the rest is history.
But you know who did take that film offer the second go around? His wife, Jada Pinkett Smith.
I know. I always thought that's a funny thing. Morpheus was also kind of an interesting one. Val Kilmer was definitely a guy that was being explored. Samuel Jackson,
for Gary Oldman. For any part of this film, apparently. Any part.
The interesting thing about Keanu Reeves and Lawrence Fishburne's performances is they play it so finely. You know what I mean? Like, they just never over-emote, which really helps sell these characters better. And when we name all these other actors, and I think about all these, like, grandiose performances that they give. I didn't mention Johnny Depp, but Johnny Depp was also in consideration to play Neo. Keanu Reeves basically beat him out for the role, too. Oh, so, wow. Yeah, and I just think about who Johnny Depp, and Johnny Depp can definitely play even keel, but you just think about all the things he was doing with Tim Burton at the time. It's, I don't know, it would have been a hard sell for me, that's for sure.
Well, which is a weird thing, because the Wachowskis told Lawrence Fishburne, we want you to play it like Neil Gaiman's main character in The Sandman, which is weird because I never put those two things together.
Yeah, they're only related by name, you know, and right. It's like, you can think philosophically how Morpheus is like haunting the dreams of Neo, but it's still an interesting, directorial choice for sure. I think that's it, right? Like, Hugo Weaving was pretty much the guy. I know Jean Reno was offered the role, but he did it. He didn't want to go to Australia. And Joey Pants, I keep calling call him Joey Pants, but it's Joey Pantoliano, which is easier to say Joey Pants. He was in Bound with the Wachowskis.
The Wachowskis are loyal to their actors because pretty much they took the entire cast of Sense8 and put them in the last Matrix film. All of the crew with Bugs had major roles in Sense8. And then you have the German guy on the rival ship, also in Sense8. They're loyal to their actors. If they have a good working relationship, they will find something for them, which is kind of cool.
Chad Stahelski played Trinity's husband in the most recent film. And if everyone knows, Chad Stahelski was one of the stunt coordinators working on the original Matrix films. Oh, wow. Yeah, they have a really close relationship working on those John Wick films. I thought that was a really cool
connection there. Yeah, and we almost had Janet Jackson as Trinity.
Really?
That would have been not good. I don't know. She's not a bad actress, but it's just, that's a choice. But, you know, Jada Pinkett Smith was also in consideration for Trinity. So was Salma Hayek. I mean, all these names, they really brought him out for these movies. Another suggestion, Neuromancer, 1984 science fiction novel by William Gibson. That was a big influence on the Wachowskis as well. Wes, are there any things that you like to suggest if people like The Matrix?
Yeah, I've got a couple, but also shout out to Neuromancer. Fantastic book. Yeah, so, I mean, most recently, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Fantastic movie. Definitely, I think, a bit inspired by The Matrix, both in terms of plot and of action sequences. I just thought that movie was thoroughly enjoyable. I don't know if you two have thoughts, but I have one other recommendation after this.
I enjoyed the movie a lot. Like The Matrix, like you said, it revitalized the career of Ki-Hui Kwan, who was basically retired from acting over the last 20 years and just doing other things in Hollywood to make a living. So it was really cool that the Daniels sought him out and revived his acting career. And it was a big stepping stone for Stephanie Hsu, who's now nominated for an Oscar and has recently appeared in the new Peacock show Poker Face, which is getting rave reviews. So her career is about to take off. You can definitely thank this movie being a big part of that. It's visually just an amazing movie. It's a lot of fun, has a lot of heart. And I'm a big Michelle Yeoh fan. Always love Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah, she's great in this. My other recommendation is actually for a video game. Don't know what year it came out, but it's by the company Remedy, who made the Max Payne series. And it's called Control. To me, that game really played like a Matrix video game should play. It's very polished, has an unsettling atmosphere. I don't think there's bullet time, but once you gain abilities, you start to kind of like fly and float around. Lots of action gun sequences throughout. It's kind of like The Matrix mixed with The X-Files.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I really recommend that one. It's a cool game.
Yeah, it's on all the consoles. So yeah, Bullet Time. We didn't talk too much about it. So the first time I saw Bullet Time, I thought, wow, this is really cool. And then it was imitated a bunch of times after that in subsequent media. It got old real fast. And in a way, I'm glad that they didn't use it in the new film. But
they had their version.
They had their version.
They had that meta sequence when they're trying to develop the Matrix sequel video game. They're like, Bullet Time, Bullet Time, Bullet Time.
Right.
Yeah, Bullet Time was really cool seeing it for the first time. And also the 360 camera angle when Trinity is in the air to do her double kick was just something visually I was just like, whoa, that's so cool. They definitely paved the way for new ways of filming action. Boy, were there imitators in the 2000s. Were there imitators?
Looking at you, Charlie's Angels.
Yeah. You know how it goes, these imitations. They always copy the most superficial things from these iconic films, and they're never imitating what really made it special. You know, they just want to feel special without understanding why it's special. Any other suggestions, Wes?
I think that's it for my suggestions.
Romeo, did you have any?
Again, Sense8. It was Wachowski's Netflix show. There's a through line with their ideas, what they sort of incorporated in the Matrix in terms of identity. And it's sort of like their idea and themes about love. And that sort of carries over to it. It's about eight strangers from all over the world who discover they have this unique connection. And is them trying to figure out the mystery of that connection. Actually got canceled by Netflix, but they brought it back for a movie to wrap up the storyline, which is a rarity nowadays.
All right, we did it. We talked about The Matrix. So, Romeo, your blue pill. I would like to know the truth, but if I find out that's the truth, then just keep me in The Matrix until the whole war thing is settled and then take me out of The Matrix.
So, no, because you know it's a broken cycle.
You're right about that. So, Wes, we didn't ask you, Wes, red or blue pill?
Red pill all the way. My curiosity would kill the glitching cat.
Ah, I like how diverse all three of us are on this.
I can't commit.
I have commitment issues with
it. I need to struggle.
I struggle with that. All right. Well, Wes, thanks so much for coming back to the show.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Romeo. Great time as always.
It was a lot of fun. We'll definitely hope to have you back in the future as you strive to join the Five Timers Club. This is like a recurring thing we've been doing on our podcast lately. We keep bringing up Five Timers Clubs, and this is your third time, right?
So a couple more to go.
Yeah. We're thinking either jean jacket or a button. So we have.
Which, unfortunately, that's going to be me making it.
Jean jacket from scratch.
We're going from 10.
I think the merch needs to be something comfy, so you could wear it while binging, like a scarf or a beanie.
Or a snuggie.
A shawl. Okay. Bring the shawl back.
Yeah. Bring the shawl back, yeah.
Well, we're going to workshop this, Romeo.
Okay. Damn it. Yeah, okay. All right, let's do this, I guess.
All right, listeners, stay tuned for final thoughts and mailbag. Welcome back. The Matrix is a lot of fun to talk about with Wes. It's so nice to have Wes back. He's been on quite the personal adventure himself. Turned out to be a pretty good discussion, very thoughtful discussion. What's really cool about The Matrix is that you can scratch at the surface and talk about so much about these films and still not even like really get as deep as you could have got. Like, I didn't even bring up one of my favorite theories about The Matrix, where it's like there's multiple layers to The Matrix, almost like Inception, how there's like four layers of the dream.
What?
So I still think that even after Neo wakes up, they're still in the Matrix. It's just like a more believable Matrix. Like the red pill just takes you to a more like grounded reality of, but you're still actually in the Matrix. I'm thinking along the lines of like, why would the machines ever allow humans to wake up, period? So they just come up with more layers to the Matrix.
It's like a deeper level of the game. It's like Hades. I think you finally beat the game. You go through the end and you're like, oh wait, there's more.
Exactly.
All that hell you went through. No, you're not done yet. It's like an MMO. It never ends. That's a messed up theory, and that would have been fun to explore. But yeah, you're right. There's just so much to this franchise. I mean, we could have dedicated a whole episode to the first film alone, because there's just so much to discuss, and even like breaking down, because the movies deconstruct the hero's journey and certain archetypes in that journey is overwhelming to think about, especially when I was trying to gather my thoughts for this episode. I had a list of things that I wanted to cover, but it's just so much, but definitely worthy of a 50th episode. Yeah, and then of course Wes is such a wonderful guest. Always elevates the conversation. I hope to have him back soon. Like you mentioned, he's on an adventure. I'm hoping to, in the upcoming year, snag him for another episode. But yeah, it's always great having Wes around.
Okay, so let's go ahead and just follow up on a couple fact checks here. So I think we kind of skirted around this, and I just wanted to be clear that we know that this is the conclusion from The Matrix Resurrections. Can Neo be the one without Trinity? And the point is that Neo and Trinity are both the one. I think that was made pretty clear by the end of Resurrections, because there's absolutely no subtlety in that film. So we get it. We get it. The other thing, though, that was just a quick correction is that Wes mentioned that Link is Tank's brother, but Link is actually related to Tank and Dozer through marriage. He's married to Z. Z is the sister of Tank and Dozer. So I just wanted to make sure that we corrected that there. And he said he really liked Tank. I'm more of a Link guy. I like Link a lot, and I like his relationship with Z. And I like Z too. I like that Z fought in the war, because she said, like, if I want something bad enough, if I want Link back with me, I'm not just going to sit around and wait for it to happen. I'm going to go out there and do something about it. And I thought that was badass. You know what I mean? Yeah. So didn't get a chance to mention that in the episode, and I just wanted to say that now. All right. So I think that's it. Now it's time for us to move on. Just to reiterate that this was our 50th episode, and we are so happy to have gotten to this milestone. We always knew that we could get here, but we will admit that it took us a little longer to get here than expected. It's just that there's a lot of planning that goes into this, and then there's the recording, and then there's the post-production part of it that also takes some time, because, you know, this is not our full-time job. We're not full-time podcasters. We are normal people who have a podcast and enjoy doing it very much and are doing everything we can to keep it going. And so far, we're doing it. We're still doing it. We're enjoying doing it, and we hope we can get to 50 more. Wouldn't that be something, Romeo, if we got to 100? Yes. Imagine watching 100 different TV show or movie franchises. That would be really something.
I know. I'm just thinking about it. I'm like, we're getting to, like, I'm always afraid, like, are we getting to the bottom of the barrel yet? Are we? But no, there's just so much to cover.
There really
is. There's so much to cover. And I'm already thinking about the next group of 12 episodes I want to cover. And I know David hates when I say this. No, let's focus on what we have to do this year.
Because even then, what we have planned this year, it all feels like it's good. It's going to happen. But even that could change. Even that could be like, right. Oh, shoot, now we have to pivot from maybe doing this episode to doing something else. You know, it all depends. Because, you know, in life, some things get thrown at you and your schedules get thrown off. And so we're just trying our best to stay the course. And as long as we can give you guys 12 episodes this year, then we feel like we did our job. So with that being said, time to tease next month's episode. Next month's episode is The Americans. And joining us to talk about The Americans is Kelly Ruelas. If you aren't familiar with Kelly, she was on the show with us two times before, once for Justified and another for The Outsider. I thoroughly enjoyed both of those episodes. So if you have time to take a listen to those, be sure to do it, because especially The Outsider, that's actually one of my favorite recordings we ever did. I've listened back to that one a few times because I'm just like, this is really, really good. And The Americans, just to give a brief history on this for me and Romeo, if there's a list of shows that are our shows, by our shows, I mean me and Romeo, The Americans makes that list. We both absolutely love and adore and can't wait to talk about this show with you guys. We're so passionate about it. And we love spy shit too, because we also feel the same way about Homeland.
I'm waiting patiently for when we get to Homeland.
Yeah. And so I know I jumped the gun on teasing next month's episode. I need to get through the whole social media stuff, but that's just how excited I am for it. Like,
right?
This is the most excited I've been for an episode. Oh. I'm excited for every episode, but this one in particular, I haven't been this excited in a while. This is going to be good.
Like, really excited for that. That's going to be coming out soon.
And so on that note, let us know what you think about The Americans, or let us know what you thought about this episode or any of our previous episodes. You can always do that by reaching us at bingeessentials.com. It's a great way to be in touch with us. And whatever podcast platform you listen to us on, if there's a rating system, go ahead and give us a rating, give us a review, positively, preferably. So that'd be really amazing, especially on Apple Podcasts, because it really helps with the algorithms. 5-star rating and a review to follow up with that would be just awesome. So as we continue to try to help the show grow little by little, week by week, month by month, you can also reach us on Facebook at Binge Essentials, and you can find us on Instagram at Binge Essentials. You can find me on Instagram at David Rocha Binge. You can find Romeo at RMora02. You can find me on Twitter at David Rocha Radio, and you can find Romeo at RMora1. All right. So with that being said, I want to thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you guys next month.